It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security.
Welcome, everybody. This is Carl Rhett John, and this is the National Security Hour for America Out Loud News Network. And I just have a wonderful special guest and friend, and I've gotten to know her, fairly well over the past year or so. Her name is Lisa DuVernay, and Lisa is she got religion on getting involved, and she lives in Arizona, Cottonwood City, Arizona, and she just wanted to get involved. She didn't like what happened in 2020. She didn't like what she saw in the state of Arizona in Cottonwood. So she ran for city council and she won. And we're going to talk a lot about this. I think she's an incredible, incredible case study of what it means to be an American and get involved and try to get things right. So, hey, Lisa, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And welcome to the National Security Hour.
Well, thank you so much, John. It's an honor to be on. It's a pleasure to share what I'm doing to see if any other people can just do the same.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I was just going to say, I could give you some background on myself if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. I always like people who appear for the first time. Tell us your journey, Lisa. How did you become Lisa DuVernay, and just your journey from where you started to where you're at right now? Go ahead, please.
Okay, so originally, I'm hailing from Australia, obviously. I went from there after school. I went to Canada for about 7 years, and then I moved to Michigan, where I met my husband. He was in automotive robotics. He owned his own company in Michigan. So very, very obviously, I'm very familiar with the big three and everything that went on in 2008, which I'll get to, but I feel it's very relevant to what's going on today. So, and then we moved out to Arizona back in 18. Our daughter is a gymnast and she got a full ride out to University of Arizona. And we came out here and just decided to relocate. We've sold our business, relocated, and just felt it was time for a change. So I feel the exposure from living in Australia, Canada, and then in Michigan, then to here, I feel the exposure to different cultures, environments, infrastructures. It really influenced my worldview on how I approach different forms of government, especially with the two international backgrounds.
Wow. Now, so you went from Australia to Canada. So
yeah.
That's kind of growing up in Seattle, I got to know a lot of the folks from British Columbia and Vancouver. A lot of them came from the Dominion system. So was that what allowed you to kind of just go easily from Australia to Canada?
Yeah, I mean, work visas back then were really, well, they're still easy to get. And a lot of Australians, after they finish school, they usually travel for a year or two. It's a cultural thing where now, having my daughter, I think like after school, get on with it. But it's a cultural thing. So I went to Australia, from Australia to Canada very easily. And I ended up just staying and just doing different things up. And then I ended up being here.
Wow. So you met your husband and then you were in Michigan and you got to know about the automotive industry. So what did you learn? And you mentioned 2008. Why was that significant?
Oh, it was life-changing because, so if you're a supplier to one of the big three back then, it was, you know, Ford, Chrysler, GM. In 2008, when the recession hit, I felt like in all the news and all the public on the West Coast, they fully didn't understand what was going on. In Michigan back in 2008, when the big three collapsed, we had 38,000 people a month leaving our state. And they're still feeling the repercussions now. So school districts, you know, people, my niece is a teacher, she'd show up to school, there'd be five kids missing, they'd walk away from their homes. So you had so many people leaving the state, skilled people, a lot of the tier one and tier two suppliers, they went out of business. Thankfully, we stayed in business. My husband's company was around since 1952. So they had a very established history. But the effect of the recession then was everywhere you looked. It was scary. So I know what a recession will look like coming to the whole country that's going to come, and it's going to come. You know, it affects a lot. It affects everything. Cities were just gone. Schools closed. We had two schools in our city, in the school district, closed. And now we're just talking to people from Michigan on the weekend, and they said, after the schools, there's so few students. Now they're starting to want it to consolidate with the cities next to them. So they've even continued to shrink because people leave and they never come back. So it was bad.
Wow. Wow. Now we use the term stimulus for everybody's memory. You know, if it hadn't have been for the meltdown in 2008, very possibly, because McCain was ahead until the October financial crisis. So was that intentional? Well, who knows? But as Obama came in, my understanding was there was lots of decisions made, and I was actually spending time in the White House at that time, end of Bush and beginning of Obama, and I was, you know, I had my own personal political views, but I tried to keep them out and, you know, be very open-minded and be professional. But clearly there started to be this attitude of winners and losers. And I know as part of the stimulus money, the Obama folks were definitely weaponizing stimulus money. Were you affected by that, or did you see that with your role as a supplier to the big three?
Well, thankfully, Chrysler, before they actually declared bankruptcy, they actually paid our company, which wasn't not a lot of companies that were paid. We got paid outright at the start, but it still meant they would just cancel all the jobs going ahead. So it affected us greatly. We closed we had two big factories. One was closed. You know, you cut your employment down to like a third of what it was. We took a personal 50% pay cut, my husband and his brother who own the company, but your bills don't go down. But I mean, we were fortunate enough to survive that. But so many of our friends, they just didn't, their companies that they'd worked their entire lives were gone. So I don't think stimulus went to the suppliers. I think it really went to the big three.
So did you, you continued on, but at a certain, you said about 2018, you decided I guess you would, you sold.
Yeah, sold. We sold the company. Yeah.
Okay.
They went into, my husband designed these automated robotic carts, so AGCs, and that really took off. So that was going to be the retirement, sell the company. So when the time was right, we sold it. And we actually sold it in 2016, waited for our daughter to graduate, and we thought we'd come out here. And we liked it. I didn't think I'd stay in Arizona. I just thought we'd stay till she graduated. However, living in a more rural area in Arizona through COVID, I realized, yeah, I liked where I was. We were, I would say, unaffected by COVID for more than maybe 3 or 4 weeks. In a town like this, whereas we just didn't have all the rules and the stipulations and everything that everyone around us had. So I realized I liked a community where people still, you know, we still had our rights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mayor did unilaterally bring in a mask mandate against the entire then council's vote, which was, it still haunts him now, because you don't have the right to just kibosh a vote, but he did. He vetoed it. But I still think for the majority of people living in a conservative town with people that I would say would be the majority like-minded, I felt after COVID, this is where we wanted to stay.
Okay. Now, Cottonwood is kind of in the northwest. Everybody kind of think about Arizona as a rough, like slightly rectangle. So you're in the northwest kind of toward Las Vegas. Is that the idea?
Yeah, we're up by Sedona. So we're, you know, northern Arizona. We're about an hour from Flagstaff, like 15 minutes from Sedona. We're like high desert. So we're in Yavapai County, which is a really large county, but it's interesting because it goes from this side of the mountain to Prescott and Prescott Valley on the other side. So you do have varying factions, so to speak.
Okay. Got it. And that's a beautiful area. Beautiful area.
Yeah.
So love it. So you said your daughter went to U of A down in Tucson? Is
mm-hmm.
that, okay.
Yeah.
So you were kind of going back and forth between there and Tucson. What's going on? We're going to talk about your experience in Cottonwood, but what do you think is going on in the bigger state? I mean, I have relatives in the very south of in Cochise County, but Arizona used to be a solidly conservative state. What do you think is going on in Arizona?
Well, like any college town, Tucson, I'm going to call Phoenix the same because you've got Arizona State. But as a town, being a college town, firstly, it's blue. I mean, the mayor, I mean, that's just how it is there. Through COVID, they really showed what was what. Like, you'd have all the restrictions at the college. You know, everyone had to go home. Before they had to go home, it was when the BLM riots started. So they weren't allowed to be at school. The athletes were not allowed to see anyone, yet their coach texts them to tell them there was a BLM protest that they should possibly think about attending.
Oh, no kidding. I mean,
yeah.
The coach for the University of Arizona. That's horrible. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So you get kids, like my daughter started with girls that were conservatives, and you see by the time the 4 years has gone on, and with BLM and everything so political, if with athletics, the coaches have so much authority over the kids that it changes them. I saw kids that were from 19 girls at the start of her freshman year, and you could see who was conservative and who wasn't. Well, the landscape changed completely through COVID. Like, you know, you either get the shot, you don't get the shot, because you don't have to tell the parents. I knew conservative parents, but I knew their girls had got the shot, but they weren't telling their parents. Their parents saying, oh, no, we're not doing that. But the college, somehow they bully these kids into doing that. And then when you get the kids out into the community, they work in the community. A lot of them stay there. It turns into one big college. The entire town is fueled by that. And then you've had all the immigrants that have come over. Like, since then, the landscape of Tucson is different. And I don't know what it's like where your family is. I mean, have they seen a difference?
Well, we've Prince William, our county, we were kind of up close to Washington, D.C. We used to be a solidly red county. I'd say we still are. But because of the failure of the Republican Party to stay involved, get involved, they just abandoned and just presumed they were going to win elections. That's a story in itself. So, yeah, we have a lot of problems here, and that's what we're fighting for. But yeah, I'm Tucson's always been a little, kind of with the influence of University of Arizona. It's a lot different than Phoenix. It has a lot more industry, a lot more economic activity. It has Arizona State University, and universities are very, very influential in the economy. Oftentimes, they're the largest employers in states. So just the and more and more of their money comes from research grants and federal government research and things like that, less and less from tuition. But Tucson is interesting. I also know, you know, a lot of our missiles come from Tucson at Raytheon.
Yeah.
Just south of the airport at Tucson.
Yeah, I have a friend that works out there. Yeah. It's quite the facility.
It is. Yeah. It is. And it's being surrounded daily by 9,000 illegals coming up the Green Valley from Nogales. And how's that? Our number one missile plant is essentially surrounded by illegals every day. Is this by accident? I don't think so.
And there's no policing of it. I mean, in the town of Tucson, it's southern Arizona, it's not safe anymore. I mean, I know there have been illegals, like personally, we know an illegal broke into a house and raped the girl in there. I mean, but you can't find the person, you know, but you know he's an illegal. So there's more than just one, obviously more than one incident, but it's just not safe like it used to be. I wouldn't feel comfortable sending my child to school there now.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. It's changed completely. Yeah.
We have, we're about to head out to Sierra Vista. I'm going to have to come up to Tucson to pick up our daughter. She's flying. One of our daughters is flying in separately. But yeah, that South Tucson is not safe. I know the last couple of times I said, wow, this is.
It's different.
Yeah, this is not the same. I mean, you could notice. It was very noticeable. And now what happened? We just got about a minute 50 left in this first segment here. There was just a, I don't know if you were, how much you were aware of this or tracking this, Maricopa County just had a rather raucous meeting of their GOP.
Yes.
Was it a GOP? So what was your observations from that, or what did you hear about that meeting?
Well, what's interesting with it is, like, I was going to speak later about what I think of the Yavapai GOP out here, but not everyone thought what was going on was necessarily a good thing. They thought they should have just stayed the same. It wasn't like all out, hey, this is not right what he's saying, we should change things. I was shocked that you're getting vibes out here that people are like, well, how can you believe anything that's been said? There's AI, there's this. I'm like, well, it should alarm you regardless, enough to at least investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it was a good change that happened. I don't fully understand why it took that long for it all to come out, but I thankfully it did. And, you know, we're in 2024 now. So, you know, there are more elections coming up, and I think it's going to be very important who's with the recorder that we have and stuff like that going forward. It's going to be, because it's not just 2024 for the state of Arizona, obviously is a lot for 2024, but then we've got 2026 where Katie Hobbs can, hopefully we can get rid of her.
Yeah, okay. Well,
so I think that change at the Maricopa is going to have a good effect going forward.
Okay. We'll come right back to that. We're going to close out this section. Thank you so much, Lisa, and everybody.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. This is Colonel Rhett John with my special guest and friend Lisa DuVernay. We'll be right back.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, Heal Right is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use CofixRx because it works.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
All right, we're back. This is Colonel Rhett John, the National Security Hour for America Out Loud News Network, with my special guest, Lisa DuVernay of Cottonwood, Arizona, and she's a member of the city council, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. What we were talking about just before the break was not only did Carrie Lake release the phone call where essentially she was bribed to essentially walk away from her Senate run. Jeff DeWitt is gone now, the GOP chair. Now it's Gina Swoboda, a hard right Trump supporter. Ooh. So now that's we got an appropriate GOP chair. But there was also a Maricopa County Council meeting that was, a lot of MAGA supporters showed up at. And what's the matter with that? Well, you got a very, very, you got supposedly Republicans run the county council for Maricopa, but I don't know what planet they're from because they sure don't act Republican. And the Washington Post was all aghast. Here's one of the headlines. What did it say? It was a beautiful headline here. A dry run, a chaotic incident, menacing outburst, menacing mega outburst to Arizona government meeting, a dress rehearsal for the election. So, it's called the democratic process. It's called elections and the election process. And it's called citizens actually having a voice. So that was what was going on in Maricopa. So I got to know Lisa when it was after the 20 election, I got to know you a bit now. So tell us your journey for running for the city council of Cottonwood. Kind of what got you inspired, and how was the whole process of running and getting there? Because I was very impressed with you. Go ahead, please, Lisa.
Well, thank you, John. Well, I found myself, I would say, increasingly dissatisfied with precinct captain. So let me back up. Firstly, I read Dan Schultz's book right out of 2020, thinking, okay, I've got to do something. I read the book. I saw that as that would probably be a great role for me to start. You could get involved. I mean, in theory, it's fabulous. All these empty seats, I'm going to get involved. But I did grow increasingly dissatisfied with the effectiveness of the way our county uses its precinct PCs. I felt there was a lot more that could be used. There was a lot of infighting. I was just not feeling any effectiveness. So, and I think it was about that time that I ended up reading your book, The Nation Will Follow, and really, really gave me a roadmap, and it led me into exploring other opportunities which I felt would be more tangible and to make measurable changes in the community at this level. Because, you know, you illuminated that real change can only start at the local level. And once you really look into how things in your town operate and how did we get to today? And you go back. I mean, I spent countless amount of hours reading minutes from meetings to see how we got to different stages. I mean, nothing controversial, but just seeing how the city is where it's at now. And I think your book laid out pretty much the groundwork for that. So once I did a little bit of digging, I thought, okay, I'll run for council. There are seats up. So running of the council wasn't a difficult task. I had to knock on doors and get my signatures. But I ran unopposed, which really showed you the lack of citizen involvement, right? But when in my investigations of looking into things, I looked at the budget to start with. I was like, okay, how do we affect that in town? So you look at a budget of a city like this, which is only, it's not even 13,000. We have a budget of nearly $150 million, which is massive.
Your county is, yeah. We're starting to talk about some serious money. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So I look into the budget and I start to, I mean, that isn't my forte. So I had a friend help me through it because government budgets, as you know, are written so differently to regular budgets. So I learned that, but I looked at, I'll give you an example. In a city like this, you have 13,000 people. The city bought a building back in 2021 for like maybe $3 million. It was a 20-year-old building, hadn't been ever occupied. So they thought, okay, we're going to make that the city hall. Okay, so I kept reading and it showed the price tag was from $8 to $10 million. Okay, so I get on council and I see it come up. The architects are going to give us a review of everything. So the architect stands up, they give us a review and they said, oh, now it's going to go from $19 to $23 million. I said to myself, what happened to $8 to $9 million? So I went back, I documented everything chronologically. Not one time were any of these price adjustments brought to council. So you go from, this is what we're going to spend to $23 million plus the price of the building, so $27 million. And at that meeting, like the vice mayor said, well, this is what we wanted, so this is what we're just going to do. I was flabbergasted. And that's the kind of things that happen in cities.
Well, so that was a pretty significant. It went from what? Mm-hmm. It went from 8 million to what? What did it jump up to?
To 24. And there wasn't one thing. I read through everyone's emails. I went through the minutes for every council meeting. It was never brought to council to say, okay, we, you know, you've got some price adjustments, yay or nay, here we are. And then, you know, it went back and forth. I had many meetings. So now then I said, okay, so what was the original budget? So I come to find out they hire these architects. The architectural firm alone was $1.4 million, which to me, I didn't understand. But I come to find out they didn't give them a budget. They didn't give them a budget to build within the specs.
Well, oh my! Well, this just shows wow, cost growth at a city level. And how many? What's the population of Cottonwood?
13,000.
I'm holy smokes! Your budget is $150 million, and you have 13,000 population. Wow.
Quite 150. I mean, that maybe like 100. It was over, well over a million.
Wow.
You know, it was 100 and something, right?
Okay.
So I think maybe it's 144, but I'll round it down. I'll call it 120 million. Still, it's a lot for that amount of people.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So when you look at that, I threw up so many. Put it this way, they're not building the building now. Because I said, no, we have to look at everything. I said, you think about this kind of money and the socioeconomic landscape here, it's not great. You've got a lot of retired people who obviously have made a lot of money, and then you've got a lot of people who are very low income. So when I said, you look at this kind of money and what we could do for the city, I'm not saying we build a homeless shelter, but I do believe there needs to be, we have a lot of homeless, you need transitional housing. You need things to help your city. It has to reflect what our community's socioeconomic needs are, not to build a building as the current mayor would be his legacy. And when you actually really honed in on this building, so I said, so in this building, you have to build it out with what you've been given. So it's not built to order, so to speak. You're going to house 35 people in that. And I said, okay. They said, oh, we're going to employ more people. I said, okay, let's double it. You're going to employ 70 people. you think that $24 million, how do you justify housing 70 people there? And still, a lot of people don't see that as an issue. I mean, I'm not familiar with the government like you are, but I was like, I understand this. You know, so that's that was my first initial thing getting on council. So I will say that's when the roadblock started, and that's when it wasn't that pleasant for me anymore.
Wow.
Because I question things.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's amazing cost growth at a city council, at a city level. It kind of is a microcosm of how things get out of control. And it's bad enough at the federal level where you have I would say in many ways, a more robust workforce, a more robust that should be doing program management and oversight. We have a very robust at departments and agencies, what we call inspector generals. And we still have fraud, waste, and abuse of mammoth proportions. And then what you're outlining is a situation in a relatively small town where, oh, wow, a lot of things are going.
There is no oversight.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not oversight. When I actually, we've had a lot of turnover since, we've had a lot of issues since I've started, and I'm going to just call it corruption and bad apples. We have the city attorney has ended up resigning. The city manager, who was only here for 8 months, resigned. I mean, a lot of it happened because they fired the police chief. A lot of things were going on that when push came to shove, I got another member on council, and we were going to have a meeting, and we were going to be able to address a lot of the questions over the last year. That very day before our meeting, the city attorney and the city manager said their resignations were effective immediately.
Interesting. And you also lost a chief of police.
Yep. They ended up firing him for he's got a claim against the city, and the city rejected it. So now I'm sure he's going to sue the city. But it turns out, well, I was on staff at the time. They fired him for what they said was insubordination, okay? So anyone in the police department knows you can't fire a police chief for that. So they wanted him gone. And the attorney general got involved because it was a discrimination thing within the police force. It's a whole mess. And it's still going.
Do you have a chief? Do you have a new chief of police or an acting chief of police?
We have an acting chief of police, and I believe next week that it's actually going to go out to start looking for a new chief of police, because it doesn't run well when you have there are so many things going on. You had so many changes. The city, we've got an acting city manager I'm very confident with. We have an attorney that we're using right now, a new firm. And things every day, there's something more. I mean, it's going to be a long while before we get things situated.
Wow. Wow. But I don't think I heard this. I mean, this is very impactful in a small town, a big building project. And it was literally, is the term you did, it was canceled. Is that the idea?
It's not canceled. They're going to keep, we've any payments, no more architectural fees. And we've asked them to bring forth options. Like, we own city land. We could build a building. You don't need a fancy Taj Mahal. You can build a very conservative building for a lot less money. But what they did is they had the architectural firm give us these three options. So the three options by them made the third option, which was going with them, the most attractive. And I said, well, you can't, they're unbiased. We need an unbiased person giving us these quotes. I said, that's not even quoting a building. They're taking figures online and giving you a guesstimate. We're not having a contract to tell us what we're doing. So basically it's a no-go right now. And I don't think it's going to go ahead. I mean, I think structurally the building's not, it has structural issues. I asked them, did you look at the building the inspections? And they said, yes, we looked at them. And I said, no, not from 2022. I said, from when the building was originally built. And they said, well, I don't know if we have those. And I said, well, we do, because it's our city building inspector that would have done all of that. So when they looked at them, I said, I have them here and I can show you the structural steel damage. And structural steel damage needs to be, you don't fix it, it needs to be changed. You know, so I don't think they're going to go ahead on it. I think they'll have a long road ahead. So I think the goal would be in the future is to cut your losses, try to sell the building and, you know, do something on a conservative level with the money. Not that much.
Wow. I'm kind of, because you're a community member. I know
yes.
situations like this can be, there's members of the community who, some of them might be happy. Some of them might not be happy when something like this is pointed out on as far as the city council spend. So yeah, fascinating. And I'm not in any way implying this has anything to do with it, but in my investigative experience in matters like this, always watch money laundering always works best. I'm not saying in any way this has anything to do with the situation, but it's always gambling casinos and construction contracts. Gambling casinos mm-hmm. and construction contracts.
Construction.
Yeah. You gotta watch them like a hawk. There's all kinds of tricks you can pull to pad the invoices. And I'm not saying in any way this has anything to do with what we're talking about, but it's something you have to have proper management oversight. I mean, it's like doing construction at your house. If you're not really paying attention and you appear to have deep pockets, well, that contractor just yep. keep on adding on. And wow.
I think the city was happy about it, though, that we put a stop on this, the people.
Yeah. And that's a big project. Especially if you don't have, if you don't have professional staff that know how to conduct program management.
Mm-hmm.
That is a big task, especially at that dollar level. I kind of like, wow, that's a pretty big project for a small town. We got less than a minute here. In the next segment, which is the last segment, this has been a great conversation. This is kind of, there's some interesting things that Lisa's going through as part of other stuff, and we're going to talk about that. So Lisa, thank you so much. Everybody, we're going to be right back with Lisa DuVernay. City Council member, Cottonwood City, Arizona. And she is just a ball of fire of action. And we're going to be right back.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created heart and vascular health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
We're back. This is Colonel Rhett John on the National Security Hour. And hey, governance of our cities, of our towns, of our counties, that is national security. That's where everything starts for our constitutional republic. So now, Lisa, you came in, you wanted to be part of the solution here. You saw things, you didn't like the way they were working, so you came in. Now, tell us about, there was a group that wanted to come in and have an event. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
Okay, so this started last January when a group came in. It was called Miss Nature. It's a Arizona-based drag show that they were targeting rural Arizona to bring drag show, family-friendly drag shows out to rural Arizona.
Family-friendly drag shows. That's an oxymoron. Family-friendly drag shows. Okay, go ahead.
So they rented a city building. So when you're renting a city building, obviously that's how I knew about it. If they rented somewhere I didn't know about, I don't even know if I would have found out, but it's a city building. So I asked the mayor, like, what's going on here? Is this a drag show? It is family friendly. So that's when everything really happened. I have no qualms with drag shows, none whatsoever. But when you say they're family friendly, I do take opposition to that. And I had spoken about how they've been sexualized. I went, you know, I did a big presentation on it. But when I realized, I was trying to get an ordinance crafted. So when I realized that the mayor, the attorney, the city manager, they weren't really on board with this, because the mayor, he called himself an independent. However, he does lean left. So we had hundreds of people attending our city council meetings. And our meetings were moved to the rec center. They were that big, with so many people in opposition to it. And it was about the minors. I mean, we had children, high schoolers speaking up. And we had people on the other side too, but I wouldn't say a lot. I'd say maybe six at the most. So once that started, they would come every meeting to call to the public. And the mayor would not let me put it on the agenda. From the very first week it came up, I said, let's put it on the agenda. We can discuss what it entails. Will they abide by our city codes? We don't have a code right now that prevents minors from drag shows, but we have a lot of things in the code that should have been adhered at this performance. Now, they wouldn't let anyone from the city council go to the performance, which is against the law if you bought a ticket, but that's that. But we have codes against paraphernalia, and I asked the city manager at the time, will you have someone there to revise all of this paraphernalia to see that it's in line? Yes, yes, yes. And then obviously no one did it. So when after the show on the Monday, I talked to the attorney and I said, why wasn't anyone there? Why wasn't anyone looking, not just to see our city codes, but there are Arizona statutes that actually crosses the line out too. And she said, it's discriminatory. We can't do that. And I said, but if the code is discriminatory, then we should take the code out. I'm just asking you to look at the paraphernalia. So I got a lot of opposition. So from there, then you had a group called, Rural Organizing Initiative. So they started having their meetings and they decided they were going to recall me, because it wasn't that I was worried about minors. They just think I'm a homophobe and they say I'm ultra MAGA and nothing ultra is good.
Ultra drag is okay, but anybody is a different, you know, and I think there's a very creative, like one of the things they'll use the term homophobe. Well, it's like, hold it. That actually has nothing to do with the issue that's being talked about.
We're talking about
drag and transgender in front of a child. And I think part of the issue with this presentation, wasn't it they wanted alcohol? Was that there was some kind of connection with alcohol?
Yeah, and actually the attorney, we have an issue right now. They're saying we didn't give them the alcohol permit. It was discriminatory. A local bar sponsors them. They asked for the alcohol permit. They brought it to council. And I thought about it long and hard how I was going to approach this. You cannot discriminate. I don't want to discriminate. But what I said, so what I did was I looked at all the paperwork that they filled out, and I went to our council meeting, and I said, regardless of who is asking for the permit, the paperwork's not filled out correctly. I said, does anyone in council, have you looked at the application? I hadn't, and we had at the time an attorney that was on council. She was my council member. And then it ended up, they're looking at it and filled out correctly. So I said, that's fine. Take it back to them and have them fill it out and come to the next meeting. Well, the city manager said, I just usually go back and say they can change it. I said, but that's not the rules. The rules is they have to come back to another meeting. And I said, that's respectfully, but that's an administrative failure, not mine. When they handed it in, you should tell them, no, this is not filled out correctly. So we did deny the permit, but it was on definitely administrative grounds. So they weren't allowed to have alcohol. It went off fine. There was no ruckus. They say there were protesters outside, but the police said there was no issues whatsoever. But, you know, they're coming back. They're coming back to town. And I think that really started this ROI initiative. They started the recall. And, I mean, they're big bucks because they send texts out to every member of the city saying, be here to recall, sign the petitions. I mean, every person will be sitting, we're sitting somewhere, everyone's phone started going off. And it's all about me and how they need to recall me. They said, I showed when I was trying to have the ordinance brought in, they said, I showed, and this is very ironic, they said I showed a pornographic video at a city council meeting when there were children present. The video I showed was a family-friendly drag show. It was labeled that, it was promoted as that, and I did preface it with saying, this isn't the drag show that was in town, but if you state that we're allowed to have family-friendly drag shows, these are some of the kinds of drag shows we could get.
So they're using projection. So you showed that, and then they're saying, oh, mm-hmm. You showed pornographic material. Well, hold on a second here. If that's pornographic material, then what they're doing is pornographic. I mean, this is classic communist psycho babble projection. So here they're going after you. Now, are they going after any other members of the city council?
There's another member that's being recalled. They might not, because it probably won't align with the elections. His time will be up soon. They're trying to recall him because they say it was sexual harassment. No, they've called him a sexual predator, actually. Okay. And that's what they're saying. And obviously none of it's true, but we as a council wouldn't vote to sanction him because the mayor brought up a resolution that none of us had seen prior to the meeting. So we said, how can we sanction someone when we don't even know what happened? So there was, you know, they said there was an investigation, which there wasn't. So they're saying that I showed a pornographic video. The other guy's being recalled himself. The second thing is my husband ran for the planning and zoning committee, and they said there was nepotism because he was allowed to be on. It's a whole different committee. And I said, is it the law that you can't be? The mayor brought up an objection. And I said, is it a law that you cannot have two people in the same city working? And he said, well, no, you can even have two family members on the same city council. I just don't think it's right. So I said, okay, so let me get this straight. It is not against the law. And he said, no. And then the vice mayor said, well, it doesn't matter if it's a law or not. I'm like, what world are we in here? Well, if it's the law we follow, if it's not the law, it's okay. So they're criticizing me over that. And then their last statement is funny. They say, what do they say? I don't understand how councils work. I don't know the rules, so I shouldn't be on the council.
Wow. Well, and this is all the rules. See, I think it was so important to have Lisa on here because, one, it's important to get involved. But Lisa's getting a lot of fire here, and it's from groups that the Rural Organizing Initiative. We don't even know who those people are. I looked up on their website. Clearly, they have some funds and resources.
Yes.
Is it a Soros group? It might be. I don't know. But it's there are always these initiatives, and there's always these community organizers that are going to come in and they're going to just browbeat and just be nanny, ultra nanny staters that are just going to drive everybody crazy because they just want their way. And oftentimes there's strings and links to some of these Soros groups. So yeah, this rural organizing initiative didn't come out of thin air.
It didn't.
Yeah. I mean, plants just don't grow in gardens. This is part of the takeover of Arizona. So here's Lisa, didn't like what she saw, wanted to get involved, got involved, and now she's bringing a fire. So I want everybody to really know about this, support Lisa, understand what's going on here, because this is there's a lot more to the story and these mysterious groups such as the Rural Organizing Initiative. Hey, these are front groups. They're front groups for destroying society. And look mm-hmm. they're accusing Lisa of showing pornographic material, which all it was a family-friendly drag show, which is what they said they were going to do. So if that's pornography, then I guess the whole drag show is pornographic and shouldn't be allowed. So, but it's just this psycho projection of exactly what they're doing. So what's the next steps and where is this going here with this recall attempt?
They handed their signatures in last week, and along with this, this would be since last maybe April last year, every week you'll get something in the newspaper. There are two newspapers. They're not real newspapers, but they have such slanderous things about myself and the other new council member that we have that is a conservative that works with me. But the stuff they say, it's complete and utter, it's just non-truths, but week after week after week. And they alter off newspapers of what they say about you. And it's like, it's very hard to, sometimes it gets you down, but then you just, very hard to make headway. But now that the signatures are in, I'm working with an attorney myself who was actually, he worked on Kerry Lake's campaign, Tim Lasota. I got his name from someone you referred to me. So he's been helping me, and he's given, with recalls, it's so specific. So you go through I've gone through and seen who's in the city and who isn't in the city. They have to have an X amount of number. But with recalls, you have to fill every line out a specific way. Every person that signs has to fill their own line out. So there are a lot of things that can kick the recall back. And firstly, when your city clerk, who's the filing officer, gets all the signatures, the statute designates what steps she's supposed to take. Well, I asked last week, what steps did you take? She emailed me back what she took. Well, she was missing many steps. So I'm just really looking at every step of the piece. If they do end up having enough signatures, that's the democracy. I will run again. And I'll be spending a lot of time door knocking and pounding the pavement and getting my message out, because you can't rely on the paper. They will never, even if I've written in opinion pieces, letters to the editor, they won't print what I write. So I really don't have any other recourse except to get out and speak to people face to face.
Yeah. So this is the managing editor is the Journal Arizona is this, Yeah, it's this guy named Christopher Fox Graham. Christopher Fox Graham, managing editor of Sedona Rock Rocks News, the Camp Verde Journal, and the Cottonwood Journal Extra. Hired by Larson Newspapers. I have no idea what Larson Newspapers is, but we're going to look into that. Now, I love his description. He lectures on journalism and First Amendment law. I don't know what that means. So the guy's a legal expert and is a nationally recognized performance, a.k.a. slam poet. So this ne'er-do-well obviously is on the payroll to be just, he's some self-appointed gatekeeper of whatever he wants and thinks is true, right, and correct. So this is Ladies and gentlemen, let's call it what it is. This guy's a front guy for just, you know, communist groups who want to take over this country.
Mm-hmm. Same with the other newspaper in town. They would never print anything that's factual. They actually don't even print the facts. I mean, if you have your own opinion, that's fine, but you've got to prove the print the facts, and they don't.
Yeah.
So there's no winning in a town like, you know, a smaller town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and so that journal that the Arizona Journal that Mr. Slam Poet works for is owned by Larson Newspapers. Kyle Larson is the general manager of, you know, that Sedona Red Rock. There's more to the story to these folks, and you know they're agents of just destroying society so they can replace it with what? Well, you know, social justice, which means what? Which means totalitarianism. And every day something new is defined as being right and appropriate. So, Lisa, we're done with this whole segment. This has been absolutely fascinating. We just want to help you as much as possible. How do people get to you? How do they learn more about you? Maybe even help you out a little bit. What are your grid coordinates?
Lisa DuVernay on Getter and Lisa DuVernay on Twitter, X, formerly Twitter. So it's just my full name, Lisa DuVernay, on both platforms. And feel free to reach out, especially if there's anyone out there that's thinking about getting involved and how to get involved. Obviously I would suggest them to read your book to start with, because I thought that was great. But I think just knowing from someone who's been new to government what it was like getting involved and how it's been assimilating to the way government works. If anyone's out there, I mean, everything counts, your school board, your city councils, your county supervisors. You know, it's not always fun. And there's a lot of people, like we have, unlike people that come for the council, some of them just sign up and they just don't do anything. Hopefully, I think people are very activated now. And even if my recall won't do anything for me, it has made people aware to look at what your city government's doing. So,
yeah.
And John, I have to express my appreciation to you, you know, for your mentorship that you've provided. And, you know, I truly value your guidance. And I'd like to thank you for having me on today.
Oh, you bet. Well, thank you, Lisa. No, I just think the world of everything you're doing. You're a role model. Really appreciate it. And this is where America stands or America falls. And thank you for getting involved.
100%. Thank you. And it's been a pleasure being part of this conversation.
All righty. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, John.
All right, everybody. This has been Colonel Rhett John with my special guest and friend, Lisa DuVernay, Cottonwood City Council, Cottonwood, Arizona. And we'll be back with another episode real quick. So thank you very much.